These men are my bodyguards, their lives forfeit to the guarantee of my physical safety. Of their loyalty to me there shall be no question nor doubt. I and I alone shall have the authority to stand in judgment over them. No other commander shall they have in battle nor in service. None shall bar them from me, and none shall hamper nor stall their mission. So it is decreed. Podcast. My name's Mike, and this is episode 2, Sentinels. We're talking about the new Custodes and the Sisters of Silence that just came out for Battle for Prospero. And joining me today is someone you may be familiar with from the website, is Danger Rod.
Hey guys.
So today we're going to be talking a bit about the Sisters of Silence and the Adeptus Custodes, or the Legio Custodes, depending on which book you read and which website you look at the moment. I think officially they're the Legio Custodes. But before we get too much into the Custodes and the Sisters, we've just finished playing a game with them today, actually, in the 40k environment, so we'll talk about that as well. We'll start with a bit of a wrap-up of where we've been and what we've been doing. So let's talk projects first before we talk about obviously everyone's seen your Warhound on the website. What are you doing at the moment?
At the moment, I am still planning for the schools event in 2 weeks. I'm taking my Mechanicum along. The list is developing as we speak.
I think the Unrealists have got to be in today, don't they?
yes.
So hopefully you'll submit it in the next 12 hours or so.
That's right, but I've changed it a number of times and it's ran through different variations. Still haven't had a proper game with the list I want to take. It does include 3 Thanatars.
Yeah, well,
so
that's
going full unfriendly mode.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, the thing that we've seen certainly locally with Heresy events is that the standard combo is Primarch plus some sort of assault bodyguard, whether it's the named version or just a Cataphracti unit or something equivalent, and then a Spartan, and that vehicle then drives towards the enemy as fast as possible, disgorging said Primarch and bodyguard, who then charge and punch things to death.
That is pretty much what we see in the Perth scene. There are some other players out there who take a different approach.
Yeah, you know, you get the double knight combos, and there's a couple of obviously legions that don't have their primarchs that are having to make do with tooled up praetors.
Maybe I should fit a knight in.
We got the Lord of War slot.
I do have the Lord of War, and there aren't many options for Mechanicum yet that have Lord of War slots other than a knight.
No, that's
true.
But
I don't think I need one. I think with the 3 Thanatars and the Domitars and
there's a lot of toughness 7, toughness 8, and your characters can join monstrous creatures as well, which is hilarious in 30k.
That's it. When they are Legio Cybernetica, so that's the reason I love the big robots. They all get +1 initiative as well. So you have Domitars coming in at initiative 4. You have the Vorax, a big unit. I've got about 4 or 5 in one single unit. They come in at initiative 5.
Yeah, so
weapon skill 4.
Before the Marines that they're fighting, which is awesome.
Yeah, and they've all got AP2 power blades as well, so they do mince with units. And the rotor cannons are actually quite good as well.
I suppose the flip side, though, is you're dealing with a much lower model count than the average Astartes army, where you lose 3 Marines for 45 points and you kind of shrug and it doesn't have a big impact, but you lose a 45 or 50 point Vorax or something
65.
Significant.
65.
Well, there you go.
Or a 265 point Thanatar, and it starts to,
Well, I suppose when you think about things like laser destroyer arrays and some of those
thud
guns.
We are starting to see some of the new toys come out with the new red book that got dropped, I think it was May or June this year.
And you've also got to remember the new book Inferno, which should be out any time in the next couple of months, will significantly change the landscape as well.
I don't think it is. I think after seeing a few pictures today of the Heresy Weekender, which has been announced for February, they all have the Battle for Prospero artwork on the tickets, and I think we're going to see it delayed. I think we're going to see book 7.
The fact they're previewing it in December's White Dwarf, Like, if
I don't know.
You look at the Gene Stealer cult release, we got the White Dwarf, and 2 weeks later, we got the full release. You look at Battle for Burning of Prospero, we got the White Dwarf, and a week and a half later, we got the full release.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. I would love them. Right.
Come on, give it to us for Christmas. Seriously. Give me Inferno, you bastards.
I think we'll get Inferno.
I love you. I didn't mean that.
We'll get Magnus. We'll get Magnus for Christmas, I think.
Oh, we should definitely get the plastic Magnus, which is a fantastic sculpt. I really like it. I know it's been polarizing for some people. I really like it.
It's the horns on his chest. I won't say what.
But that's always been the artwork. The boob horns have just been a thing.
Oh, well, you went there. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, the boob horns.
I didn't call it. I could have called it a lot worse. But the fact is that all the artwork for Magnus for a long time now has included that big chest plate with those two big curved horns. And I like the fact they've updated that style for him for his demon version and kept it, because it's obviously this personal affectation that, despite him not having a physical body anymore, it's still something he identifies as his. Despite having big cloven hooves and all the rest of it, he's obviously gone, I really need my boob armor.
I don't think as well people have realised how tall he is.
He's bigger than a bloodthirster. I think he's probably close onto a knight, if not larger.
I think he's eye to eye with a knight, at least, and his wings go even taller.
Well, I was looking at the photos that we saw from the video that Warhammer World did to kind of go, yeah, okay, someone's leaked the box art, here you go, here's the real model. And where he's holding it, I compared it to Archaon.
Right.
From the End Time series, mounted up on the big dragon monster thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I reckon he'll be wingtip to wingtip, probably very comparable to that. The base he's on is huge. Magnus is on a very big base. I don't know that he'll be as tall as the whole big monster, but I think he's going to be that sort of scale.
That's a big model.
He's going to be big, is my guess. I could be wrong. Well, I mean, obviously we've got the Forge World Russ now. And
beautiful, and I am so tempted to get him. He's a gorgeous model. I know you don't like his leg. Like his rear leg.
I reserve the right to see the model in person, because I wasn't sold on a few of the Primark models' poses until I actually bought them. So apart from your Mechanicum, yes, you've been dabbling in Thousand Suns with Battle for Prospero.
That's right.
Burning of Prospero,
yeah.
Sorry.
Burning of Prospero. I've been playing around, and you did challenge me for a new army for the new year.
Because you've got black Ravenwing, you've got black Iron Hands, you've got black and very dark red Mechanicum.
Yep.
Your guard are quite dark as well.
Yep.
So let's see some actual colour and less weathering and less battle damage. Let's see a clean, shiny army.
And that's what I've done. I'll probably try and throw some pictures up to go along with the podcast, but I've done about seven or eight test models, and I still haven't hit the right balance yet. I've still gone, oh, okay, the wash, and it doesn't work. I've tried the Spirit Stone Red over the gold.
Did you try it over silver as well?
I've tried it over silver as well, and I'm not happy with it. I don't like the finish on it yet. If I'm going to build another whole Legion army,
you got to get
to
it right.
A very clean, crisp finish with vehicles as well, it's not going to work on vehicles. So
yeah.
They are bringing out these new technical ranges. They brought out some recent, they've done new basing paints as well, which
yeah, the thicker versions of the standard ones,
thick and thin, and I really want to go down and have a try that out. Unfortunately, I want to do a snow base as well, but Thousand Suns on snow is just not going to work. They don't look like they're Santa's personal army.
Yeah, that would look kind of cool.
So the Thousand Suns, obviously no rules yet, no Legion rules. The base units of the army at this stage, I'll be building my Mark III Marines, Mark IV as well. I'd like to base it around like a plasma kind of weaponry, obviously with some psychic support as well. And yeah, it'll be a different army for me as well. I've also turned heretic as well, and that's unusual for me. I'm normally a loyalist through and through.
It's funny you say that, because all the legions that I've been collecting, like I was looking at the Primarchs I own, and I've gone, okay, I've got Angron, Lorgar, Horus, Fulgrim.
There's a common theme here.
Yeah, like it's all traitors. There's not one loyalist Primarch sitting on my shelf at the moment.
You've painted Korax, haven't you?
I've done Kurs. I think the only ones I haven't actually done anything with at the moment are Perturabo and Perturabo.
Just to say for some of the people listening, it's Perturabo.
Perturabo. Perturabo. Someone got a lisp here and thought it was funny. I'm pure trader, essentially. I run Gal Vorbach, Serrated Sun, Word Bearers. My World Eaters are a Dreadnought from Betrayer. At the moment, it's planned as a Dreadnought army with...
that's this army. Yeah, that's... That's horrible.
You know, it's Angron, a bunch of Red Butchers in a Spartan, and then Dreadnoughts. It's not going to win many games, but it should be a lot of fun
it's
to play.
It's not just Dreadnoughts. You should be
Well, they're Leviathans specific. And it's Contemptors and Standard Pattern Dreadnoughts. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
And Dreadnought Drop Pods.
And Dreadnought Drop Pods.
Oh, yes.
So, I'm used to playing all the Traders, and yet, with Burning a Prospero, I've got my Space Wolf army back out of the boxes and I'm building Loyalists.
Are we calling them Space Wolves?
No, they're not Space Wolves in 30k, they're the Vulka Fenrica.
So yeah, so that's the new army for the new year, as well as still working on my Iron Hand, so I've got some breaches with the Mark IV breaches with the, I believe they're out of production now, the older breaches set.
The conversion kit that was designed for Mark VII's, yeah.
Yeah. I've got a Proteus as well, it's built, it's not been undercoated yet, that'll go into that army as well, and yeah, so I will, you know, tick along with the Iron Hands. I do still love them. I managed to get one of the limited edition librarians as well from Forge World.
That'll go in your Thousand Sons.
That'll go in the Thousand Sons. He's the one who's exclusive from Warhammer World, and he's there. I've never anybody seen him. He's casting a demon, basically, or he's
summoning something.
Anyway.
Well, the Thousand Sons in the books are all obviously they've got. What are essentially familiars, they're these psychic manifestations that help the Thousand Sons in the warp anyway. So doing him up as sort of this ghostly entity as opposed to a full-blown bloodletter,
yeah,
with that sort of radiating pale blue or a pale green could look really effective against that.
That red arm.
I'd probably go blue because green might make him look like a Christmas tree, particularly against that red armor. But blue's probably the way to go there.
That's right. Now, I also had a laser destroyer array, the Vindicator one, the tank, and I'm tempted, that was... you know, scheduled to be an Iron Hands vehicle, it might slip its way into the Thousand Sons. It's been undercoated, it's black, and I think it might just squeeze into the Thousand Sons.
Yeah, I think the you'll need fire support anyway, and if
that's
I mean, you've got plenty of Iron Hands as it is, there's no harm in shuffling it over.
That's right.
So,
but yourself, what are you working on?
I'm still getting ready for the trip to Vegas in February for LVO.
Viva Las Vegas.
Oh, look, I'm actually really looking forward to the trip at the moment. The main disappointment for me is it was meant to be a trip for my wife and I to go, just the two of us without children, and as it conspires, that's the first week of school here in Western Australia for next year. And my oldest child goes into high school and my youngest child goes into kindy, and the first day of both of those things is the day that I'm due to fly out.
Right.
So while I'll get to see them go to school, I won't get to see them come home from school because I'll be on a plane. And my wife said, no, she can't bear the idea of not doing that. So I'm going now with one of the other gamers here in Perth. Sam is coming up. It's about a 4-hour drive from Albany where he lives. He's coming up to meet me in Perth. And then we're flying. He's playing the 30K event. I'm playing the 40K championships. And I'm at the moment reinvigorating my pointy era armies. So I've got a Corsair army in the works at the moment, which is mildly horrific when you start looking at the kits I'm using to kitbash these models. And
I've seen some of the HQ ones. You're probably going to throw them up on the blog at some point.
I've been sharing bits and pieces of them privately just while I build the units and wrap my head around the army. And I've obviously written the series on the website. But the conversions, I actually gave a couple of them to one of our local GW managers here in Perth who thinks he's a bit of a gun when it comes to picking parts.
I was here for this.
And he spent about 20 minutes trying to figure out where some of these parts were from and just couldn't pick them because my bits box for all things Eldar is so extensive that I'm producing kits that are older than he is and then cutting them up and converting them. So
yeah.
it's been a fun experience.
I've seen some of these. You've got some Armorcast Titans. You've got some Rogue Trader era.
Yeah.
Harlequins, which are very impressive, and then you've got
sprues upon sprues. Yes, far too many sprues.
And it's one of those things where Mike decides that, okay, I'm going to build XYZ model, and then he just delves into his bits box and then pulls out fine cast things. He starts chopping up what I would class as, some fairly valuable models, and he goes, oh, I'm just going to make a prince, make a baron.
Oh, look, when I did the, I went to build the prince who's mounted on a jet bike, and when I went to do that...
he's not mounted on a
jet bike. Well, he's straddling a jet bike looking thoroughly impressed with himself. But when I went to do that conversion, I went looking for the parts for it and ended up building a Void Dreamer for some... Because I found other parts and went, that'll be good for the Void Dreamer. I know I've got that somewhere. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
And half an hour later, I had a Void Dreamer. And then other than that, I mean, I've been dabbling with, obviously, the new Custodes and the Sisters of Silence. I picked up a set for one of the GW stores, built, painted, played a game with them, and then had them back to the store for the store to have in the store in the early afternoon. as a favour to the store manager. And it was good fun. I built the Sisters of Silence. They were really good to build. And they took, I don't know, 5 minutes to build the fight. Like, they were pretty intuitive. They all went together reasonably straightforward. And then the parts were numbered on the sprue. And then I did the custodes. And I didn't have instructions because I forgot to take them. And they were one of the most painful kits in the world because, like any of the... If anyone's ever built Grey Knight Terminators with halberds, the two-handed versions, trying to get those arms to match up if you don't know the right numbers is just an exercise in frustration. But they were fun. Like, I didn't do a particularly whiz-bang paint job on them. They were done to tabletop.
They still look pretty good to tabletop.
They were pretty good. I was okay with them.
The gold is quite forgiving, though.
Yeah, that is very true.
I'm not saying you're a bad painter.
So, yeah.
Actually, you're a very good painter.
But that's kind of been where I've been for the last couple of weeks. And then I've got a tournament which I'm able to go to in a couple of weeks' time, which is 1,650 points, which is a weird number.
Yeah.
But I'm...
Five detachments?
Six detachments.
Six detachments.
Was the limit. There's a few... Like,
at that point, why bother capping it? I mean...
Well, I know the guys have taken out the unlimited super heavies. I think they've limited it down to one, I think it was. I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
But to be perfectly honest, now that we've got rules for the custodies, that's what I'm going to be trying to take. So
now, you were telling me this before we started recording. You're trying to take 20.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. But I suppose we can get into that in a second when we talk about the main topic. But yeah, right. I want to try and bring 20 custodes to that event. So that'll be entertaining, if nothing else.
Of course. For you or for the opponent?
Well, I suppose it depends on who I play. If I manage to win a game, it might be a bit of a surprise for everyone concerned, myself included. But before we get too far off topic, why don't we take a quick break and then we'll get back to talk about all things custody. So we're back and we're going to start talking all things Legio, Custodes and Sisters of Silence. So before we get stuck in though, we will preface this with, we have only had one game with them and they are the 40k versions, not the 30k versions. So we're going to talk a little bit about the 30k rules that have been released in the White Dwarf exclusive first, and then we'll get stuck into the 40k side of them where we've actually got some table time that we can talk about. So for those of you who don't know what the Legio, Custodes and the Sisters of Silence are, both of them are Heresy era, or Great Crusade era, I should say, formations of genetically modified warriors for the Emperor. The Sisters of Silence man the black ships and travel with the crusading fleets to protect the legions and the forces from psychic activity. They're essentially psychic nulls, much like the Calexus Assassin is. And moving into 40k, they are all but, well, I suppose, extinct. They still man the black ships, but from all the reports, they're not a mobile militarized force in the 40k universe anymore, whereas in 30k they were definitely out with the legions, and they're most notably used at the burning of Prospero when Leman Russ confronts Magnus, and Russ brings one Sister of Silence for every 10 legionaries. So yeah, look, I think the Sisters of Silence as a 30k entity, that we haven't got any rules for them yet, I will also add, for 30k, so it'll be really interesting to see how they integrate into I think they're called Talons of the Emperor, is the army list that they mention in the White Dwarf.
I believe so, yes. So we've got the White Dwarf in front of us right here.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they integrate into the 30k environment without any sort of context at the moment. Obviously, we know they'll get their great swords, which is what they're known for, and then bolters and flamers as well. So in terms of weapon payload, I think we can be reasonably satisfied with what the basic unit gets. I think we'll probably get a very similar version to the 40k rules as well. But how they operate, whether they're single models, that like an apothecary that you add to units, maybe, or whether they are actually units of sisters, I don't know.
They could go both ways. They could allow you to take single units, like the Tech Marine or like the apothecary.
Maybe we'll get like a veteran version where they are singular, like they call them Sword Maidens or Null Maidens or something as an individual that's powerful enough to operate.
We could speculate all day, but well, that would be pretty cool. I think it may be more a campaign unit.
I think going to an organised event, a lot of the loyalists, I think, in the short term will field them just in case they have to deal with a Thousand Suns army, and that's assuming the Thousand Suns get a lot of psychic activity. But I also think that'll peter off over the 12 to 18 months following, just because people will be spending all these points on sisters, and then they'll go through four games or whatever it is over 2 days and not use them.
It depends, again, what transports they get, what is in this list. Obviously, we've seen now the Forge World, how are we saying this? Caladius?
Caladius, the grav tank we're talking about.
Big grav tank. So, obviously, there's going to be a full fleshed out army for the Heresy.
Yeah.
So I assume they're going to, the Sisters of Science are going to drop into that as well.
Well, that's certainly the way it reads to me in the White Dwarf.
It certainly looks that way. But
I mean,
I don't know if everybody will take them or not. I don't know.
Look, I think the fact that there's plastic ones that people are going to be getting when they get Burning for Prospero, I think it's going to be a natural thing to include a unit of five in the short term because it adds points. It's a contrasting colour into a Legion army. I also think if you can take singular ones that you attach to squads like Apothecaries and you've got 20, 30, 40 points left over at the end of an army build, it's an easy slot in.
It could be dangerous, though. You could be playing around with as the inherent balance of the game at that point, although what is balance?
It really does depend on what they do with the Thousand Suns, because at the moment we just don't see librarians at all at any of the 30k events. We haven't had that many, but one's...
You occasionally see the one or two, and that's my problem with having an individual sister in a unit, a Death Star as we would call it.
Well,
suddenly just going, okay, you've got some psychic defense. No, you don't.
Mm. And that's the natural place for them, is you put them with the Primarch and his bodyguard and you go, well, now we don't care about you being invisible, we don't care about you having iron arm or warp speed or anything else, we're going to punch you to death. And that works really well. Of course, the flip side of that is you can't really do it with the like Lorgar would be a great one to do it with, but obviously he's not loyal. So if you're running Lorgar, well, you can run loyal Lorgar, you just can't run him transfigured, so you're still rolling for powers and he's not harnessing particularly well. But you wouldn't obviously put sisters in that army. No. So the only places that you're going to put sisters are going to be in the loyal armies, which means you're only really dealing with Lorgar, Transfigured, or Magnus.
I think this will be... Mainly, it will come down to when people know who they're playing.
Yeah,
when
I agree.
It's friends playing rather than coming to an event or a tournament or... what's the word?
Oh, look, narrative events, I can see them being used because you're playing Prospero, for example. You're playing the Prospero missions and you're including sisters, but... I suppose we'll just have to wait and see with the sisters.
Yeah.
Moving on to the custodes, though, for 30k, we do have two sets of unit rules. Now, they are listed as draft rules in the White Dwarf, and I've got a few complaints with them, so I'm glad they're draft. The troop choice is the Custodian Guard squad, which are the classic ones armed with the Guardian Spears. We've got a really good stat line for 30k in particular. There's two discrepancies in my mind that...
There's a few.
The unit has. So we're dealing with a stat line that is mostly fives. Two wounds apiece. Only leadership 9 is my first complaint. They're the Emperor's personal bodyguard. Why are they only leadership 9? That really bothers me significantly. On top of that, they do have a rule that makes them immune to fear, but they're not fearless. Don't have they shall know no fear or anything remotely, or stubborn even. They don't have anything like that, which when you're a sentinel of the Emperor, you're there to protect the Emperor no matter the cost. Surely we should be having... Maybe there's an army-wide rule for them, I don't know.
I think it may come down to banners.
But the fact that you can't have them hang around, which is what they should be doing, is a real disappointment when you're playing 165 points for three.
But just remember, though, that this is Heresy. They don't kind of hand out fearless as easy as they do in 40.
165 points for three and leadership 9.
Yeah.
Two wounds each. Like these are the Emperor's bodyguards.
Another interesting point, they do drop the Eternal Warrior. Again, that's...
Yeah, look, Eternal Warrior I can live without. I think that's okay. I like the fact that the basic custodies get a 5-up invul in this version, which we'll talk about the 40k one in a second.
They also get allowed to do a 3-inch...
The unit coherency.
Unit coherency, which is... quite handy. It could come in useful, especially when you're trying to dodge barrages.
I don't think you're stating how important that is. When you're on a 40 mil base and you have a 3-inch coherency, you shoot a 5-inch blast at them, you're hitting one.
Yeah.
You might manage two or even three, depending on how your unit's actually positioned on the table, but on a 40 mil base, if you center it on that 40 mil base, you're not hitting anyone other than the dude you're landing it on if they're at max coherency. That's a huge change.
Actually, I need to check. Is this just between themselves? I mean, if you threw an independent character in there, does that 3-inch...
Well, the unit has the rule. I'd say it's one of those lovely, weird rules where...
So I'll read it out here. A unit composed entirely of models...
With this special rule, that fixes it.
There you go, this special rule.
So at that point, though, you can mitigate the fact that you have so few models when dealing with Thunderfire cannons, Thud guns, by having this huge coherency. The fact that all the Guardian Spears in this particular case, the guns are assault, which is good,
Yes.
The spears themselves are okay. You're an AP3 as user, so they're strength 5 AP3. On the charge, they're strength 6 AP2. And they've got a special rule called Lightning Blows, which 6s to hit give them extra attacks, which is nice as well.
But obviously they change from the 40k version where they get block, which
yes.
I think is more, you know, more useful.
Look, again, it comes down to the environment you're playing them in. As a unit, I actually think they're pretty good. I'm disappointed that there is no leadership benefit for them given the role that they're intended to play in the story. The other two interesting things about this unit is the first, there's no sergeant.
There is no sergeant.
And the second thing is the squad size is 3-9, which I take as a precursor to their transport options in 30k.
But they are bulky, so whatever they're filling out is...
So if you take a step back and look at them realistically, you could easily go, the reason there's 9 of them is to allow you to put an independent character with them to get them to 10, which in turn means 20, which means we might get some variation of a Spartan or a Land Raider that allows a full maxed out unit.
Are you calling it? Are you calling it?
Oh, look, I've got my
Guardians, thoughts. Guardians, or Guardian Custodes in Spartans.
Oh, look, I've got a few thoughts on what this army list will actually be, but I'll
talk... explain why the Spartans recently went up in points.
Yeah, well, it could be. The other unit they've got is the Elite Choice, which is the Sentinel Guard Squad. Now, essentially, we're dealing with the same stat line and special rules. It's 195 points for 3, so we've gone up 10 points a model. And we're trading our Guardian Spear for the Sentinel Blades and a new shield. It's not a Storm Shield. It's a Presidium Shield, I think it's called. And what's also good about both these units, I should point out, is they both get assault grenades.
They get plasma and crack.
Yeah. So unlike the 40k versions, which get no grenades, these ones remember how to throw them, which means we're not slowed by difficult terrain.
Maybe
and
they threw them all 10,000 years.
They ran. The Emperor's stockpile ran out, and when they got to 40k, they went, "Oh, we've got none left." So we've got the same basic rules and things. The difference is though, the shield is a 4-up invul, not a 3-up like a Storm Shield. But in close combat, you do get rerolls on that 4-up, which makes those Sentinel shields really durable in combat, particularly when you're dealing with AP2 weapons in the hands of a Primarch or a Praetor with the Paragon Blades, which you see all too commonly. The Sentinel Blades themselves are fine. You've got a user AP3 rending weapon and an Assault 2 bolter, for lack of a better description.
Yeah, that's right. And also, just to mention, the Custodian armor actually gives them move through cover.
Oh, they get move through cover as well. That's good.
In Heresy, which is great for when assaulting. Now, when they assault through difficult terrain, they're going out of initiative and they're not having the -2 penalty.
For the distance, yeah, that's good. The other thing to mention about the Sentinel Guard is the shield wall rule. Shield bulwark, I think it's called.
Shield bulwark, yeah.
And they basically get defensive grenades on top of everything else when they're in base-to-base, I believe.
When a model with a special rule is in base contact with one or more other models which also has this rule, they count as being equipped with defensive grenades.
Which means that if you are trying to charge a unit of Sentinel Guard, whatever you are charging them with has to be meaty to begin with, because they're no slouches at weapon skill 5, strength 5, with a 2-up, 4-up rerollable in combat. But on top of that, they're denying you extra charge bonuses, which as a shield wall is really good. So it'll be interesting to see the rest of this army list. Obviously, we know we're getting the Grav Tank, and that Grav Tank, if you haven't gone and checked it out, is massive.
The Caladius?
There's a photo. We did a little bit of rough calculation. We reckon the base that it sat on is a knight base. It's not a flying base.
Fingers crossed. That's a new base anyway. It's a new flying stand.
Well, there's definitely a new clear stand underneath it for sure.
Yeah.
But that is a big tank. Like, that is
a big tank. I'm not sure what the weapon is.
It'll be Land Raider sized, would be my guess, in terms of length and width. It's not little.
But also, so you can see the precursor to the Sicarion in there,
yeah,
in the design anyway. So,
and certainly the turret. I mean, the turret to me feels like an energy weapon of some kind, but the barrel's very reminiscent of a Hellhammer's main gun.
Yeah, the Nova Cannon from the Guard range.
So hopefully we get a new gun of some description.
You do seem quite excited by this.
I've always loved the artwork of the Custodes, and I've tried a couple of times over the years to convert them, but they never looked right. They were always too thin. Now, these sculpts are a bit polarizing for some people because they are so huge. They're not little.
I wasn't sure about them until we played the game earlier, and they are massive.
They are
in proportion when you see them next to a Guardsman or a Sister of Battle.
Well, yeah, we ran the game, and we might as well start talking about the 40k stuff now. We played a 1,500 point game using 5 Custodians. The Custodes were 2 with Sword and Shield, 2 with Guardian Spears, and then 1 with a Shield and the Vexilla. And the Sisters of Silence I built were all with Great Swords and a Sister Superior. And we threw them in with a Sisters of Battle army and an allied Inquisitorial detachment as well, so I could get a Land Raider in there to try it out. and we played it against a Liberius Conclave of Ultramarines alongside an Astra Militarum Guard Army. And it was certainly a pair of army lists that we built that were probably not anything we'd normally take to an event or...
I've never ran a summoning army before.
No, it was certainly geared towards showing off these two new units, and that's shameless. I'll readily admit to that, because we wanted to see how much of an impact they would have.
I was trying to kill them, though.
Oh yeah,
I was not trying to.
No, you did try and kill them, and you did in the end. But
your seven turns.
It did. But the fact still remains that we deliberately waited the game to add extra psychers to see what an impact the Sisters of Silence would have against a psychic heavy army, and we did. Deliberately, you know, we didn't fudge the rules in any way, shape or form. At the time, we were running them unbound. As it turns out, the armies were completely legal because we got the detachments the morning we played the game and just didn't spot them.
Yeah.
So,
and you would say your battle bunker is basically a shut off from the world.
Well, that's
there's
it.
No we're, signal in there.
The Obsec dungeon that we play in my gaming room is so heavily insulated and whatnot that we don't even get Wi-Fi or mobile phone signals in there. So yeah, we didn't get any updates. Played the game and then went, oh look, there's formations for them now. But it wouldn't have mattered because we didn't get any of the special rules because there were only one unit of each.
That's right.
And the army was Battleforged, not unbound, which was great. So, you know, talking about the rules that we did get, we'll talk about the Sisters of Silence first. Again, we got a very solid stat line. They're actually really comparable to Dark Eld or Incubi.
Well, I'll just read out the stats now. Weapon skill 4, blizzard skill 4, strength 3, toughness 3, 1 wound, initiative 5, 2 attacks base, leadership 10, 3 plus armor.
Yeah, so they trade a point of weapon skill for a point of leadership over an Incubi. However, they significantly, I think they're 7 points cheaper per model than an Incubi. Same saving throw. They cause fear, I believe, and
yes,
are fearless
are,
themselves.
Yeah. And the psychic abomination, which is very similar.
Well, it is the Klexus rules. So blessings don't work within a certain distance of them. They force enemy psychers, or all psychers rather, to harness on sixes. They don't generate warp charges.
Neg 3 leadership to all psychers in that 12-inch bubble. So
it's really, really good in terms of anti-psycher. The biggest problem with... and we should point out as well, the weapons they can pick is... they start with bolters. They can swap to great swords for free, which is +1 strength AP2 melee.
Two-handed.
Which doesn't make any difference because they don't have pistols anyway.
Yeah.
And then for 2 points a model, I think it is, they can take flamers. Now, we weren't with the great sword variant because I like to charge and stab things in 40k. So when I built them all with great swords. And yeah, they did exactly what Incubi do. They go in with 3 attacks each on the charge. Generally speaking, they're going to be hitting on 4s, unlike Incubi who hit on 3s because they are weapon score 5. Against the guardsmen, I was hitting on 3s.
Yeah, but you're hitting guardsmen. That's not really any achievement.
And at strength 4 AP2, they on average, one sister kills one marine a turn. So they're pretty reliable in that regard. Against the guardsmen, I was throwing out 16 attacks and averaging out probably killing 6 or 7 because of the toughness 3 compared to strength 4 made it a little bit more in my favour. The fact that they also get rerolls when fighting psychers was a cool little rule.
Yeah, I think we forgot that the first round of combat.
Yeah, but I think we did. And then I looked it up and went, hey, there we go. I get rerolls to hit.
Yes, it's not a comfortable place to be sitting there. If you're a psychic army, it's not a comfortable place to be charged by these guys.
No.
They just switch off everything. And they are obviously comparable to the Klexus, but 75 points for a unit of 5.
Look, and I think they're less durable than the Klexus. They're only toughness 3. They've got 5 wounds compared to his 3. He's toughness 4. He's got a 4 up invul. They've got 3 up armor. He's easier to hide.
Yeah, he does have infiltrate as well.
And he's also harder to hit because of his special rules about targeting him.
That's right. But, you know, he's 145 points.
Well, that is true. So I think in overall effect on the game, it's a bit of a wash there. The fact that when you take 3 units of them in the formation, you can start removing enemy warp charge dice is actually kind of nice. But I also think it's a bit underwhelming, to be perfectly honest, because at that point you've sunk at least 225 points upwards. You know, you could easily do 400 points for those 3 units.
Yeah.
And you're taking 2 warp charges off the enemy. If it's going to be one of 2 things. It's either overkill for whatever you're playing because the opponent might have one librarian or one character that can cast, at which point the 3 units of sisters is massive overkill. Or it's a psychic Death Star that has 15 plus dice, and it, while losing 2 dice hurts, it's not game breaking for those Death Stars because they work on 2 or 3 powers.
It's, to be honest, for me, I look at that rule as a niche rule for the Heresy. If they transferred those rules over to the Heresy sisters, That works well because you don't see a lot of librarians.
No.
So losing one dice, two dice, oh, okay.
But Librarius Conclave are maxed out with Tigerius and four librarians as what, 11 dice base? At that point, 11 plus a d6, you're getting 14, 15 dice a turn, losing two when you only really want invisibility, prescience.
Electro displacement.
You know, you've got 13 dice at that point. After losing two, if you've still got 12 dice,
yeah,
you will still get those three powers off because of the way the Librarius works. It doesn't really care. And it's the same with the Screamer Star. It's the same with the Seer Council. When you've got 15 or 16 dice, two dice doesn't mean anything.
Where it will come into effect, though, is if that these guys are the girls, the sisters get into that 12-inch bubble.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're not harnessing. You're only harnessing on sixes. And
you're not generating as well.
And you're not generating. So soon that starts to shut them down.
But that then hits their biggest problem, is the fact there is no transport option for them.
Not currently, no.
Well, I'm assuming we're not going to get anything else 40k for them in the immediate future, given the fact that they came out and went, no, you're not getting anything but Unbound, and then quickly changed their minds and gave us a rough Battleforge formation.
Yeah.
I don't see us getting anything else. Not in the immediate future.
No, and obviously the current FAQ as well, changing the way that you can't embark on other people's dedicated transports or transports.
At deployment,
it does hurt. You know, putting them in drop pods would have been fantastic.
Oh yeah, drop
pods. Just shutting down entire armies. But you know, we played the new FAQ. People say it's a draft; it doesn't count. It does count.
And at that point, if you accept those changes, the only way to deal with these models then is like I did in the game. I started them in a little pyramid shape with my canoness in the middle. The canoness only has power armor, but she did have a relic that gave her rerollable armor saves, which meant that when the Wyverns attacked, I was able to tank all the hits on the sister, on the Canoness, and not lose a Sister of Silence, which then meant in my turn one, they were able to embark on that Land Raider.
Yeah.
And then drive off. So I think if you're going to use them in that capacity, I actually reckon a bunker with an escape hatch is a very easy plug-in.
Oh, that'd be beautiful. Yeah, just literally just start the game embarked on a...
Yeah, you could even just at that point just leave them with bolters or flamers.
Flamers. I think 2 points for a flamer. Unit of 10 with two or three flamers in there works.
Yeah, rest with great swords.
Rest with great swords. Bolters, I can't ever see really having the
No one ever says, God, I wish I had five more bolters in this army. and I think that's the key to that. So I think a unit in a bunker with an escape hatch that you can deploy forward and then make the enemy go, oh, great, there's a 12-inch bubble that as soon as they get out, because obviously the bubble doesn't work while embarked, as soon as they get out of that bunker, and that's potentially halfway up the field,
yeah,
you've got this big 24-inch wide circle that just...
shuts everything down.
You know, your 1,000-point Death Star now has to actually be very careful about what it does, and they're hiding in a 3-hull point, I think the little standard bunkers are.
I'd have to check.
I think they're 3. Armor 14 little box, you give them a void shield if you really want, and good luck getting those sisters out without dedicating some really heavy guns to it.
Yeah, potentially. Well, I mean, one D hit kind of...
Well, that's why I said you have a void shield to it. But I think as a unit, I think we will actually see them in competitive play. I think there's enough ways to plug them into an army for a low enough points with no taxes that seeing a unit of 5 to 10 show up in Battleforged armies at an event is not an unlikely thing. The Custodes, on the other hand, which we'll talk about now, are an entirely different beast. The Custodes have a stat line that makes Paladin Grey Knights cry.
They're a bit jealous.
Because they're cheaper than a Paladin with a better stat line. Strength and Toughness 5 is huge. Top that with Eternal Warrior is just mind-melting. The fact they don't have a stock invol is slightly made up for by the fact that their shields are actually Storm Shields in 40k. And the formation, if you have three units of them on the table, they all get a 5-up invol natively. Although I will point out, it does say units on the table.
That's
which,
right.
Which means that if you lose a unit, you drop to a 6-up. If you have any units in reserve, you don't get it either. Because it actually says units on the table.
Okay. That's so, a good pickup. I didn't notice that.
I've been writing lists, I will admit, with multiple units of them, which is why I spotted it. But in terms of stat line, they're a great combat unit. Like, you mix and match the spears with the shields. The spears are strength 6, AP 2, add initiative with block, which is fantastic.
So how does block work?
Basically, when you roll to hit me, I get to roll one dice per custode who has the rule. And if I roll higher, is it equal to, or is it just higher than your roll to hit, your hit misses.
Anyone trying to read it here? If the result is higher than the to roll hit.
So five custodies, while not going to hurt a knight, can essentially shut one down, because apart from stomp, and if you roll a six on stomp, they're dead, but realistically, anything else they don't care about. And with only three, like, if you can grab those single models that only have a handful of attacks, the custodies between storm shields and block can easily shut down enemy units just from striking entirely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is quite an entertaining thing.
But we've got to get them there. How do you get them around?
Well, they have deep strike in this version, which is nice. The unit size is five models minimum, not three. But they are 260 points for five before you give them storm shields and vexillas, which makes them really expensive. One thing I will point out, though, that everyone seems to have missed is they all have power daggers, which everyone kind of goes, why would you give them power daggers? There's two reasons that I can think of. The first is, if you are crazy enough to want to run them sword and dagger without a shield, you can, which will give them another attack.
Yeah.
I can't see that being a particularly sensible option.
No, but not really when you've got
the Guardians Vexilla, and the Guardian Spears. 30
points, and it gives you an extra attack anyway.
Well, the Vexilla is a really good buy for the unit. Unlike a lot of these, and that's the second point of the power dagger, when you take a Vexilla, you give up your Sentinel Blade or your Guardian Spear, which essentially leaves him with no weapon except the power dagger. Now, unlike every other banner bearer that you have in 40k, like the Grey Knight Paladins
yeah.
who give up their force weapon for the banner, this guy still has a power weapon. So he's still strength 5 AP 3, like all the Sentinel Blade users, except he's stabbing you with a kitchen knife.
He's got a big kitchen knife.
And the 30 points you pay for plus 1 attack on every model in the unit that is an Army of the Imperium, it's not just the custodies, is a bargain for 30 points, because a lot of these sorts of banners only work on the unit or...
The 12-inch bubble. Yeah.
12-inch bubble of Fearless on top of that is really good. And for 30 points, it's actually a decent buy. It's cheaper to buy a Vexilla than it is to buy another Custody, and you get more attacks out of it.
But the interesting thing with the Vexilla, that bubble, it just actually says, Armies of the Imperium, I've become Fearless. So you could drop that in front of a guard blob, or even behind a guard blob, and you have potentially a 50-man Fearless unit, because what with the 12 inches up a Vexilla?
Yeah. So, look, like you alluded to a second ago, though, the biggest problem with custodies, like the sisters, is there are no transport options. And that means either deep striking using their special rule, which is what we did in our game, or trying to embark on a transport turn one and move off. I don't think either of them is a necessarily good or bad option. Deep strike is what I went with. I could have mucked about and tried to get them into the Land Raider. Ultimately, because I wanted to get the sisters in quicker towards the psychers, I went with them in the Land Raider and elected to deep strike. The custodes,
I think the custodes are tough enough against most armies to drop in front of them and then spend a turn.
Well, the two shot. Wounds eternal toughness 5 on top of a 2-up, probably 3-up save.
However, in 40k at the moment, we're seeing a lot of grav, especially in Perth.
Well, grav and plasma still do a number on them.
Yeah, it hurts them badly.
It's the two wounds that are the saving grace at that point, where, you know, your Grav Centurions will put out their, is it 15 shots for three?
15 shots for three.
So they're going to get, what, probably 9 wounds after it's all said and done?
Yeah, I think, was it...
Because they're wounding on twos because of the Custodes 2 plus armor, and they're getting rerolls for the Grav Amp.
Yeah, so
they're probably going to end up with nine or ten wounds.
That's going to hurt. You've got the 3 up invuls.
If you've got a storm shield at the front, you're going to lose a custode, maybe two, to that, and then they will just ginsu that unit.
But centurions at that point are not going to have a good day.
All it takes is one guardian spear to make it in, and those centurions are all dead.
Yeah.
But at that point, that custode unit is significantly reduced in its effectiveness. So I think the only way to run them really effectively is either with some sort of transport vehicle, ideally a Land Raider or a Spartan, if you're allowing 40k, or trying to come up with a combination of allies that allows you to use electro displacement and, you know, get them into combat that way.
Your first turn charge with these guys could, with using the Librarius Conclave and other buffs as well, they could potentially just one turn or even two turn armies.
Well, the Paladin Death Star back in sort of 5th and 6th edition worked because Drago had Gate, and you were durable enough with Drago tanking that they could walk around the table a little bit, you could buff them and they were okay. The Lich Guard Death Star for the Necrons works because of the Nightmare Shroud? No, what's it called?
I'm not too sure, you know the Necrons.
Yeah, that's a problem. The item that lets them deep strike once per game, Ghostwalk Mantle?
Yeah.
That's Oberon's version of it. But basically, it lets them redeploy the unit, and then they pop a solar staff, which means you're only snap firing at them, and then they rely on their 3-up armor, toughness 5, 3-up invol, generally rerolling ones because of Orokan, and then 4-up reanimate. This unit falls into that same category of it needs some way of getting where it needs to go, and it needs to have enough models with enough buffs to be durable enough to weather the fire to then engage. The problem is that, like those other two Death Stars I've already mentioned, the Lich Guard and the Paladins, like them, they also have no real firepower. You shouldn't bolters at things. And they're not relentless, which means if you're firing the bolters on the Guardian Spears, you're not charging, which is just ludicrous.
Yeah. And then, I can't envisage, in 40k, I can't envisage you'd ever really have a chance of shooting them normally.
Well,
the Overwatch at BS2.
There is a nice vague way you could read it, that you can use the bolter, but rules as written, I don't think you can. I don't think you can charge after shooting them. So you end up in this weird position where to really get them somewhere, you're having to invest. Like, if you take a unit of 10 of them, you're up for 600 points by themselves. And then you're going to have to drop another 400, maybe even 500 points to actually make them really good on the table, to get them where they need to be, survive long enough, and then get a charge off. The problem with that is you've just knocked 1,000 points into a unit that's going to get 2 charges?
Yeah,
potentially. Maybe 3 again.
Whatever a charge, they have to kill.
And they have to do it in one turn. Yeah. They can't be stuck in combat for multiple turns. And on top of everything else, they have no grenades, and a single armor 13 dreadnought stomps them. Yeah, look,
this is going to be a bad day for you anyway.
They pretty much epitomize what is an infantry Death Star unit. They're horrifically expensive. You need to spend even more points on them to make them effective. And at that point, if you're playing any sort of objective-based game, you're never going to win that game, because you just don't have enough boots on the ground to play.
You use it as a bully unit. You whenever you place your objectives, you space them, you know, close together, and then you drop these guys in the middle and say, right, if you want to come near an objective, I'm going to charge you with this Death Star, and you're going to die.
Look, I reckon that even like the Bark Bark Death Stars are going to struggle.
Absolutely, because these guys are just going to throw so many AP3 attacks into them that those dogs and everything else just die.
Look, and the flip side of that, of course, is those dogs are going in with 3 or 4 attacks each, with, you know, 5s to wound and 4s to hit, but with 2 wounds, toughness 5, and all the rest of it, they will, properly armed and backed up, they will weather a Bark Bark Star and probably, potentially, even win it and just grind it down. And certainly if they can get hold of the Librarians or whatever's buffing the Bark Bark Star, like if you've got Azrael giving them that 4-up invol, you don't want Azrael anywhere near the shield captain with a guardian spear. You know, at that point, I'd be issuing challenges with my shield captain, going, issue a challenge, murder whoever it is in front of me with 5 attacks, AP 2, strength 6 with block, and just chewing through a unit. And if you turn around and go, nah, I'm declining, then I'm taking whatever AP 2 weapon you have in that unit
and just
saying, nah, you're not fighting with it. So, you know, that shield captain will take on a multitude of things and still win.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're waving around like Drago or a Baden or, you know, something that has those major buffed 2+, 3+ saves with multiple attacks at AP2.
An Eternal Warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas a shield captain will kill Azrael.
Oh, absolutely. I have no question regarding that.
Azrael's only AP3, has a 4-up invol.
Yeah.
The shield captain doesn't care about his weapon.
I think he has 3 wounds.
No, I think he's 4, but he's not eternal, most importantly. Which means if you've got Hammer Hand on, you just spot him. So, I don't know. I think, is it going to change the game? No, it's too many points. It's too much of a problem.
We could see somebody else coming up with a certain combo, perhaps. Oh, look. But, yeah, Electro Displacement is pretty much where I'd go.
Yeah, I think that's the natural choice. But then again, any Space Marine Assault Force, whether it's Assault Centurions, Thundercav Death Star, the Bark Bark Star, any of those Death Star armies can use Electro Displacement, and I would argue that there are builds within those that are more points efficient to do it with than trying to do it with Custodes.
Yeah.
They might not be as tanky as a Custodes unit properly equipped, but to make the Custodes good enough, you're spending at least 1,000 points on that Death Star to make them worth taking, which means that I just don't think they're going to be something that everyone goes, oh my god, I must take Custodes, because I just don't think they're good enough. Not without transports.
Wow. But
I'm going to do it, because hell yes, I don't care. I want to run 20 Custodes and see what happens.
Yeah.
And if I don't win a game, I don't win a game. But I don't really care. I want to put Custodes on the table.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And if you go into the event with that in mind, going, I just want to put Custodes on the table and make people go, oh my God, there's Custodes. Every now and again, you'll have a matchup where someone goes, oh my God, I can't kill 22 plus toughness 5 Eternal Warrior 2 wound models. And, you know, you'll win some games. And then other times, you'll have someone turn up with half a dozen Vindicators, and it'll be a bad day.
A bad day. Or you can say the Grav Stars.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to go against the War Convocation. The War Convocation has a lot of attacks.
Yeah, but...
Just throwing out so many attacks, and Grav as
but
well.
Apart from the Grav, what hurts it? Any more than any other army?
I think, to be honest, it's the sheer amount.
It doesn't care about Haywire. The Radium only wounds on sixes. The Haywire does nothing. Most of the knights you see are either Crusaders, or actually the ones we always see are Crusaders,
yeah,
with a battle cannon, which it doesn't care about, or the Gatling gun, which it doesn't care about, or the rocket pod, which they don't care about. Like, I actually think a Warcon might go...
Maybe not.
You know, 5 of them, yes. 20 of them? The Warcon might not like its day, because...
No, okay.
Even popping your Strength 4 electricity canticle, the one that gives you multiple hits...
Yeah.
You're only wounding them on 5s. They've got a 2 up armor save, 2 wounds each. It's not a good day.
No, I mean, what's...
And you can't really outrun them because you've got no transports yourself.
I'm trying to remember the name of the unit that negs 1 to your toughness. That they could potentially hurt you out.
Oh, the standard Vanguard and neg 1 to your toughness.
They could potentially hurt you.
Yeah, but they're only toughness 3 with a 4 up themselves.
Yeah.
The Custodes just...
Yeah, oh, they're Ginsu them. They turn to pink.
Which is what we saw in our game when the Custodes charged. I only had 4 Custodes charge that blob.
Yeah.
And wipe the blob out, including the Librarians.
Yeah. It wasn't a fun place to be. But I still won the game.
Yeah, look, okay, yes, you did win the game. But, you know, the Sisters did really well that game. They shut you down really early, combined with the fact one of your Librarians popped his own brain trying to manifest something.
And I rolled, what's the word...
Oh, the one eye open rule did shaft you that turn because it was the turn the Sisters charged.
I mean, we could have fudged it for the game, but we didn't. We played true. And yeah, it was a good game. We always have good games when we play, so...
Well, what that Sisters unit did, though, was because they didn't get wiped out by the blob, because I did charge one end of it and the blob was so strung out, I didn't actually die, and even charging through cover. And then it meant the Custodes landed on the same turn that charge took place. I locked you up for your turn...
Yep.
And then still had models left in my turn, which meant that when the Custodes finally did charge turn 3, the Shield Captain, out of his 6 attacks, I think killed 4.
Yeah, straight off the bat.
And then the Sisters killed one of the Librarians with Precision Strikes. And then at Initiative 4, I lost... Who did I lose? I don't think I lost anyone. I think you fluffed your attacks again, because by that point, the Priest was dead.
That's right. I think Tiggy was still alive.
Still alive, and the Primaris was still alive.
Yeah.
And they were both AP4, which meant that my AP3, or my 3 plus armor save Sisters survived.
Yeah.
And then the 3 Custodes swung. And
that was
with the Vexilla and the charge bonus, they're 5 attacks each, and I was still fighting as Weapon Skill 3 and Toughness 3 majority, which meant that when the wounds finally finished overflowing, Tigerius was dead and the Primaris had to make about 5 involves.
Yeah, he made none.
And died horribly.
He died horribly. It wasn't a good day at that point, but I still won the game.
Yeah, look, and the Custodes
moral victory.
The Custodes took, I think, 4 rounds of fire from that Vulture as well before they finally died. It was
2,
at least 3.
3 rounds.
I thought it was 4. It doesn't matter. I mean, we can check the video. But, you know, that was hitting on 2s, wounding on 4s, and me saving on 2s. And that final volley, I was going, oh, you know, I might survive this. And then, like, 5 1s, and both of them died. So, what do you do?
Yeah, well, at that point, you had basically 2 wounds left over a unit.
Yeah, well, they were both on 1 wound at that point, yeah.
So, it's going in. I mean, the Vulture does what the Vulture does.
But, you know, regardless, it did give us some ideas about the Custodes and the Sisters of Silence, and... Our initial impressions weren't particularly changed by what we saw on the table. So I think as an option in 40K, can you play them? Absolutely. Are they both really good? No. Is one of them okay and the other better than okay? Yeah, I think that's probably where they sit.
I prefer the Sisters.
I think for the effects on the table, they are a far better choice for the points that you pay for them and the effect they will have.
Yeah.
For cool value... just got to run custodes. Like, yeah. Who doesn't like giant gold armored men waiting around massive halberds? Like, you just gotta.
Yeah, best friends of the Emperor. I've still got my Battle of Prospero on the way, or Burning of Prospero on the way. I will build the custodes. I will paint them gold. But I'm probably going to do more of a Forge World gold. It's a bit duller, I suppose.
Oh, okay,
not
cool.
As bright as the...
Yeah, look, I won't paint mine the same way. I went Retributor Armour as the base colour, and they did end up quite yellow. And I think I'll be doing them differently for my next 10
I'll do the Sisters. I'll do a Sisters unit. Whether that expands into a full army, I don't know. We'll see what
Hey, if you've got custodies and Sisters of Silence and you're looking to get rid of them, send me a message. Shoot me an email.
Yeah,
I will talk to you.
Mike wants them. He needs more, but don't sell them to him. No. Or fleece him. No.
Look, we'll be back in a second to wrap this up, but until then, here's a quick break. That's it for the episode now, guys. Hopefully you've enjoyed yourselves and listened to us ramble about Legio Custodes or Adeptus Custodes, depending on which game you like to play, as well as the Sisters of Silence. I'd like to thank Richard for turning up or hosting today, actually. I've dragged myself an hour up to his place to record.
It's a little bit echo in here. I hope that hasn't conveyed too much.
It's not much we can do about it now. It's done. So... But look, hopefully you've enjoyed the conversation. If you've got any comments or any thoughts, feel free to shoot us an email or post it on the website or on our Facebook page or wherever you feel like getting in contact with us. And if we've missed anything, we've got anything wrong, because it does happen, we're not perfect, or at least Richard isn't.
If anybody's got any ideas about how to kill custodes,
I'll look
easily and efficiently.
And look, we'll certainly keep you posted, because I am going to be crazy enough to try and run them at a tournament in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to go and build and paint them, I suppose. But look, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Before we go, though, we do have an announcement to make, and that is in regards to the Southern Hemisphere Open, the show, SHO. You'll find a link on the website, and you'll also find it on our Facebook page. We're going to try and host the first, and hopefully annual, tabletop gaming event here in Perth, Western Australia. We're looking for expressions of interest for people who want to run events, whether it's gaming, whether it's painting workshops, and those sorts of things. Pretty much if you want to get involved, get in touch. And if we can help, we will. And if we can fit you into the schedule, we will. We're hoping for 3 days of just epic gameplay. You can play a bunch of different gaming systems. We're going to do 40K, 30K. We're going to do Age of Sigma. We're looking at Malifaux. We're looking at War Machine and Hordes. We're also looking at collectible card games, board games.
Twister.
No, someone said Uno. Competitive Uno was one that was touted.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. I think it was a tongue-in-cheek, but I actually think it'll have to be an opening event now. I might see myself buying about 5 dozen Uno decks and doing like a draw mechanic.
Yeah, okay.
Blood
Bowl as well.
Oh, look, Blood Bowl's a thing. Blood Bowl will be happening. So look, if you can make it to Perth on the 20... I can't even remember the dates now. How bad is that? 23rd to the 25th, I believe it is, in September of next year.
I believe it's the last weekend.
Last weekend of September next year. We've got a long weekend here in Perth, so we're going to do 3 days of play. So check it out. Keep an eye on the website and on the Facebook page for more updates. We're on Twitter as well. We'll be posting stuff there. Look, hopefully we'll see you in 12 months' time at the event.
It's going to be a big weekend. Look, we're expecting a lot of people.
We've got 3,000 square meters of gaming space.
3,000.
So we're going big. We're going to go big, and we'll see what happens. And hopefully it'll be a success and we can run it again next year. We'd love to see you there. If you've got any questions, get in touch. Until next time, though, I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks very much, Rich, for coming along.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you at the next episode. Listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.